Ellen Gawinski is the founder of Families and Work Institute and the lead author of a new national study of employers. Gawinski is also directing a project on career flexibility in academia, as well as the Supporting Work Project, a Ford Foundation project that is funding communities across the country to connect lower-wage employees to publicly funded work support through their employers. WMNF asked her today about her study of American businesses, which consisted of 1,100 different organizations with 50 or more employees nationwide.
Employers are less likely to stop the coverage. We found no change in whether or not employers provided individual or family health care. What they are doing is shifting a greater share of the cost to employees. We found 34% of employers had raised the copays in the last year for both individual and for family health insurance. And all of the benefits that are in the benefit pool, like pensions as well, or pay for disability, have been cut back. Fewer companies are contributing to employees' retirement funds. That's gone from 91 to 81%. And fewer employees are paying all of the costs of disability when a new mother has a baby.
Right. So
16%, yeah.
In terms of maternal benefits.
Right. 16% of companies now do that. Of the 56% who pay anything, 16% pay all of the costs. So it's a fraction of new mothers who get a fully paid disability leave after having a baby.
What about domestic partners in terms of businesses now? We know some local governments have been doing this a lot. You've even had this in some states. What about in the business community?
The business community is reflecting the change in society in general. There's been a jump in the number of employers providing domestic partner or health insurance for domestic partners, 14% 10 years ago, up to 31% right now.
In terms of going back to health care and pension benefits, which you mentioned are also diminishing for workers these days, are there any particular genre of employers where this is not the case, where in fact they're providing maybe higher levels of support to their employees?
Well, you mentioned small businesses, and small businesses were less likely to change the shift the burden to their employees, and that's probably counterintuitive. In terms of pension plans or any of these kinds of benefits, we looked for the predictors, which employers were most likely to provide all of the kinds of support we were looking at. Flexibility, which is what employees want most, caregiving leaves. We looked at child and elder care assistance, and we looked at health care and economic security benefits. And overall, we found two major predictors. The first was being a nonprofit employer, and that was surprising to us because I could see that nonprofit employers might provide more flexibility. That's low or no cost in general, and that would be very much in keeping with the mission of a nonprofit employer who wants to do good for certain parts of the population, you know, whatever their work is. They'd also want to do good, you know, do well by their employees. But things that cost money were a surprise to me, but we still found that nonprofit employers were more likely to provide health insurance, pensions, and so forth. Now, we also found that companies that had more diversity at the top provided this kind of assistance. In four out of the four cases we looked at, we also found more women at the top was predictive in a couple of the cases kind of benefits we looked at.
We're speaking with Ellen Gawinski. She's the president and co-founder of Families and Work Institute. And I know you're looking at trends or what's happening in the workplace, but what about in terms of, you just mentioned diversity, whether it's women or minority-owned businesses. Do you see more of those happening now than you did a decade ago?
We didn't really trace whether or not there are more of these. I do know that more women are starting their own businesses, but this study didn't trace that.
What about also flexibility? I know that it seemed to be a trend a few years ago to allow, say, employees not coming in every day of the week, maybe working for, you know, 10-hour days, 4 days a week or the like. And I don't know if that's, of course, this is probably too late for your survey now, but with this whole situation with gas and the like, it seems like maybe some companies would make it in a way that people have to do a large commute. But what was the deal with flexibility?
First, I want to say that when we began this study 10 years ago, we only looked at 8 types of flexibility. Now we look at 20 types of flexibility. So that gives you a sense of how things have changed. We look at flexible time and place. We look at whether or not employees have choices in how they manage time. We look at whether or not they have the option to work reduced time, to take leaves, to have time off, such as volunteering or going to school. And then we look at flex careers, where you can phase into retirement, whether you can take time off when you have a new child. You ask about the gas problems, and we have another report that we do where we look at exemplary employers all over the country. This is as voted by their employees, if they're in the top 20% according to this survey of employers nationally. These employers self-nominate in 30 communities around the country. And Tampa's one of them. We then give a survey to employees, and the real winning vote comes from the employees. It's called the Sloan Award for Business Excellence and Workplace Flexibility. What we found is a number of communities are instituting projects like, or initiatives like, Flex in the City. And not only does this reduce gas, the cost of gasoline. In Houston, where they have a citywide initiative called Flex in the City that's been instituted by their mayor, they save 15 minutes of commuting time each way, which of course could save you money in gas. But more people were working at home, it reduced air pollution and traffic congestion, saved people time and money. So yes, people are really responding to this.